What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Dating violence, a big problem among the youthful population, affects every community across the nation. One in three teenagers experience physical, sexual, emotional, or verbal abuse from a dating relationship. Violent behavior typically begins between the ages of 12 and 18. Abusive relationships can involve emotional abuse as well as physical abuse, and abusive relationships are progressive. They're characterized by extreme jealousy, physical violence, raging, sexual coercion, infidelity, emotional withholding, threats, lies, broken promises, verbal abuse, lack of intimacy, power plays, and control games. Abusive relationships get worse over time. Emotional abuse is as damaging as physical abuse. And sexual abuse is the most rapidly growing violent crime in America. Joining me this hour, I'd like to welcome Kathy Steinberg. She's a personal safety expert and author of The Fabulous Girl's Guide to Being Fearless. Kathy, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Why are we seeing this high incidence of abusive relationships in the teen population?
Well, there seems to be a little bit of a breakdown going on in our social fiber where teens are acting out in ways that, you know, more progressively worse than what they had in the past. A little bit has to do with what their role models are doing. And the ability now, getting online and the shows that are shown on TV to them, they're making it more acceptable. And so they're following along the guidelines that they're seeing.
So what I hear you saying is that the media does play a role in this.
Unfortunately, yes. For teenagers, when they're looking for guidance, they're looking for people, and they tend to put emphasis on people that perhaps they shouldn't put emphasis on. And when their idols, whether they're musicians or actors or what have you, are allowing themselves to be abused and then going back to abusive relationships, then the teen thinks that it's okay. It's acceptable. Mm-hmm. If my idol is doing it, then it's totally acceptable for me to do it.
What role do you think videos play? And the reason I ask that is, you know, there's been a move, you hear it, it raises its head, and then it kind of dies a little bit, about censorship. I mean, do you think that censorship would be effective in kind of molding the attitudes toward abuse that we see in the youthful population? Since, you know, they start seeing it as early as 3 years old on up.
Right. There has been an actual turn, to be quite honest with you, in the way that videos and things have been portrayed and that come out. If you see, for instance, if you see when we were a kid, and when I was a kid, cartoons used to be extremely violent.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd watch Daffy Duck get shot I don't know how many times. And that was not a big deal. And now, you know, it's been pared back, but yet there is no change. There's no impact. There continue to be a progressively degeneration in our kids and the way that they're responding and treating each other. So there's other things that are sprouting up. So you can try to curtail one thing and suppress it, mm-hmm. but something else is going to pop up, and you can't control absolutely everything. So parents need to take a very, very proactive role in their kids' development.
As you say that, do you have any suggestions for how parents may approach this? And I'm talking about, you know, the teen parents at this point.
Right. Well, they need to be a good role model to their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And teens, as you know, sometimes can be extremely difficult, a little closed off to their parents. Then the parent needs to recognize that and then get them a mentor, whether it is a trusted relative, a counselor, somebody at school perhaps, but they need to somehow get a positive role model and a mentor that this teen will trust and open up to, because teens like to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not talking to their parents, they're talking to someone else. So if you can help guide that in the direction where you need it to go, so a trusted mentor, then you can be a lot more involved in what your kids and what's happening in your kids' lives.
Well, I know in reading and preparation for today's program, I read that it was about 81% of parents believe teen dating violence is not an issue, or they admit that they don't know it's an issue.
Right. And the truth is, the scary statistic is that 1 in 10 high school students has been hit, slapped, or physically hurt by a boyfriend or girlfriend. So it's a pretty, pretty staggering statistic. And parents need to open up and understand that this is for real and it's not kidding around. And what happens is that when parents don't get involved and no one's there to kind of put an end to it or help put an end to it or help that child step up and stand up for themselves, then what happens is it establishes a pattern of behavior throughout their life.
Mm-hmm.
So now this person, this child, whether it be female or male, is going to be get into a series of patterns of abusive relationships because it was already ingrained in them since they were teens that is acceptable, and so they live the rest of their lives in these mm-hmm. negative abusive relationships because of it.
Well, you know, we often have individuals who say this violence, has not really increased, that we're just more aware of it. How do you feel about that? Because it seems like the circumstances and the environment and society has changed. And with that change, we have more violent acting out behavior. But do you feel the incidence really hasn't increased, that it's about the same, and we are just more sensitive to it, and so teens are more open to reporting what has happened?
Well, that's a good one. And I haven't seen the studies on mm-hmm. exactly what the impact is, but I do imagine, based on my experience, that teens tend to be more like they tend to emulate what they see.
Mm-hmm.
And so if one is doing it, others, and it's acceptable, and then others tend to do it. And with the advent of the internet and all this information overload that they're getting, the information is getting out there to more and more teens. So I do believe there's probably an increase over several years ago to the statistics on the abuse.
The reports indicate and studies indicate that girls and young women between the ages of 16, I think, and about 24, experience the highest rate of partner violence, dating violence. And this is about triple the national average. Address that.
Yes.
Why are we seeing so much of it in teens?
Again, and I'm going to use one prime example.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at their idols, like, for instance, like the Rihanna,
mm-hmm. incident,
where she, and I saw her pictures afterwards, and she was beat up. I mean, he beat her severely. And she spent the next several years just trying to get back with him and got back with him like if that did not matter whatsoever. And girls at that age especially, they feel that they need to be part of something. And it's the relationship, and they need to, whatever it is, they need to fix it, they need to make it better, they need to, so they accept what's happening to them and not standing up for themselves. And when they look to their idols for examples and good examples, then they see this,
mm-hmm.
and they feel, well, maybe then this is okay. It's the way it's supposed to be. I don't know. And, you know, if they don't have a strong foundation at home, or some guidance at home too,
mm-hmm.
then it's more prevalent that this something like this will happen to them, definitely.
Well, let's look at the abusee. I mean, who is being abused? I know females and males. Let's talk about what they look like as far as the age, economic status, social economic status. Can you address that, the demographics, sure. The demographics of the abusee?
Right. The pattern of behavior typically begins at the younger teen age. Mm-hmm. It begins somewhere probably around the age of 12, 13.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a scary because young girls in that age range, we don't typically want to accept that they're actually dating and getting into these adult-like scenarios, but they are. And a lot of times, it's probably more on the social-economical scale, on the lower end. And it's because the parents probably both are working.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody in the house. A lot of times, it's a single-parent household. And so they don't have anybody to really rely on to guide them. And so they're guiding themselves however they feel they can. And that's why it is extremely important for parents and even single-parent homes to really kind of take an interest, and not really taking it, not to say they don't take an interest, but to really make time to see what is going on and really take steps to make things different. And what I tell parents is keep your kids busy, and you don't have to have a lot of money
mm-hmm.
to keep them busy, but keep them busy. Get them involved in something in school, either some sort of sporting or academics or work. Have your kids get some sort of part-time job, but keep them busy and be involved, and it doesn't cost anything but time to be involved with your
mm-hmm.
kids and raise their confident levels. Get them so full of confidence that they're not susceptible to being victimized. And you have to be an example. You have to be strong, and you have to be there and be the rock for your kids to see.
Okay. Now, let me make sure I heard you clearly. Are you saying that you see more abuse in lower socioeconomic groups?
Yes.
Okay. And basically the reason why is because parents are not available to supervise. Parents may not be there.
Right. And it's not by any fault of their own, but they're working later. They possibly have multiple jobs. So the teens are left at a critical time on their own, to their own devices, to try to raise themselves. And they're doing what they feel they're supposed to be doing,
mm-hmm.
but they have no guidance to really to understand that it's not the way it's supposed to be.
Let's look at the relationship between the abuser and the abusee. Is there any type of direct connection between the two of them?
Well, yeah, there is the connection of their relationship, and
mm-hmm.
the abuser is and it could be a number of things, but it's control. He wants to have control, or she wants to have control over the partner, and it's power, or it's bad examples at home. Maybe they come from an abusive home where that's what they see. That to them is a normal relationship. They see their parents fighting all the time. They see their father hitting their mother getting physical with their father, and they feel that that's the way it is. They also have perhaps a misguided view of what a relationship should really look like because, again, they are getting their examples because they have no mm-hmm. foundation at home. They're getting their examples from watching TV or online and stories that they're seeing and hearing. And so it's them trying to formulate something based on that example, and the one who suffers is the partner because the partner is too weak or has low self-esteem and does not just break away from it and allows it to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we're talking about is the relationship tends to feed on both parties, the abuser and the abusee, is what I hear you say, because there's an abusive pattern that often repeats itself in the relationship. We have, you know, situation where an individual may select the same type of individual for a boyfriend or a mate. So it may have a different face, but it's the same behavior or the same madness. Are you seeing that?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. It's like what I said at the beginning. Once they accept being abused and accept mm-hmm. being victimized, then they will continue to seek out the same kind of relationship over and over again until they actively step up for themselves and decide that this is not going to happen. They will not be repeating this same cycle anymore. But it takes the victim to be the one that has to stand up and recognize and either seek help but needs to make a change.
And it seems like it would be so very difficult to change that pattern if that is a pattern that they live every day in their home, if this is what they see, and they may start to equate that abusive behavior with love. And I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts. We're going to take a brief break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm talking with Kathy Steinberg, talking about abusive relationships in teens. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this hour we are exploring abusive relationships in teens. Joining me on phone, I have Kathy Steinberg. Kathy is well known in the area of teen abusive relationships. She's written a book, the author of The Fabulous Girl's Guide to Being Fearless. She's a personal safety expert, and she's sharing her expertise this hour on 411 Teen. Kathy, what do you see is the general attitude concerning teen abuse among teens? I mean, do they see it as a problem, or they just kind of think, oh, that's the way things are? Or does it really depend on who you talk to?
It really depends on who you talk to.
Mm-hmm.
It varies greatly. Some kids come from great households in the sense that their parents are very involved and very engaged, and they can recognize something is wrong right away, but then others are completely numb to it. They see nothing wrong. Or maybe they do see something wrong, but they just don't speak up.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to speak up, and especially when you're a teenager, you worry so much about what everybody around you is thinking about you, the last thing you want to do is make waves and speak up. And that's a shame. That's something that it only comes with time, where they learn to be confident enough to stand up for something and mm-hmm. say something.
Well, what I hear you saying is that abuse is a family dysfunction, and it tends to repeat itself through generations. The abuse,
absolutely.
The abuse becomes the abuser, and the cycle continues.
Unless somebody does something to stop it. Now, I spent years working in prison, mm-hmm. in the male maximum security prison, where I spoke to men who abused women, who murdered women, who stalked, who raped, who violated women. And again, a very, very good indication of what it is that causes them to do this is, again, absenteeism on behalf of their parents or any role models, anybody to step up and really take the reins on them, because teens require and kids require somebody to take the reins and show them the right way things should be, not allow them to continue down some pattern or some path that they have no clue what they're doing. And when they start making their own decisions, they're wrong and they're hurtful mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they don't realize, they don't know what to do differently. So in the flip side of that, I went to work to a you know, death row prison for women, because I wanted to see why women committed the crimes that they did. And I was very alarmed to find out that a lot of them had, a very big majority of them had abusive past. And their relationships with a person who is a violent, abusive person leads them down the wrong path too. So like by virtue of them being with this person, and let's say this person is committing crimes, well, she's caught up now in the fray of that and could potentially be charged and end up in prison like a lot of these women were.
And often I would say that that abuse is sometimes mistaken for intense feelings of caring or concern. Sometimes the abuse can even seem flattering. I think of the friend whose boyfriend is insanely jealous, and maybe, you know, she's thought, oh, she's so lucky, he must really care about her. You know, the act is really excessive jealousy and controlling behaviors. But they, and it's not about affection, but the young teen often interprets that as, you know, affection. And love involves respect and trust. It really doesn't mean, you know, that you're constantly worrying about a relationship, that you have to deal with the abuse. Have you seen any of that?
Oh, absolutely. The words that I absolutely hate are when people call it passionate, because they're glamorizing what actually is violent and negative. And they should be using words that are derogatory to describe it, not to say passionate, and they're glamorizing it and making it sound like, oh, how amazing, he's passionate for her. No, he's abusive, he's jealous, it's unhealthy, and they shouldn't be together. People don't act like that. Good relationships aren't about that. When he's jealous and insecure, that's his personal problem, has nothing to do with you, but you shouldn't be in the middle of it, and you shouldn't allow yourself to be victimized by it.
Again, and I know we've touched on this, but how, well, there are a couple of things before I even ask you that. What are the particular behaviors, maybe the warning signs, for teens who may be listening, who may be in an abusive or question if they're in an abusive relationship? And then after that, I want to talk about the signs that parents may look for in their teens. So let's look at what are the signs of abuse, of an abusive relationship, that teens themselves need to be on the alert for.
Well, he's extremely jealous. He's moody. He's possessive. He's constantly telling you what to do and who you can be friends with and who you cannot be friends with.
Controlling.
Right. He controls who you are around. He puts you down. So he's breaking you down mentally and your confidence. He's tearing it down by doing this. He actually lays his hands on you. He doesn't have to lay his hands on you. He could sit at you. He could do a number of things, but if he harms you in any way, he's checking on you. He's checking your text messages. He's checking your Facebook profile. He's checking your Twitter account. He wants your password. He wants to see your email, and he wants to see your cell phone. So he's giving you absolutely zero privacy. He's got a very jealous, quick temper, and he's isolating you from, again, family, And your friends that you're close to, especially the ones that speak up a little bit, that are closest to you, because he's trying to keep you away from the people that are going to tell you, hey, listen, this guy's trouble.
And what are the dynamics really that are just going on with him? Is this somebody that was really very, very confident, given that they're engaging in all of this behavior? Are they really the opposite? Are they really someone who's somewhat insecure and unsure? What's going on with that abuser?
Well, he's absolutely insecure. And there's two factors to that. One, he could just be a very insecure, jealous person. Or two, he's probably has another relationship with someone else, And so he's checking on you extra hard to make sure that you're not doing what he's doing to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that all the time. So it's a little bit of those two factors. He can be just that he's, you know, insecure and he's unsure of himself, and the way he displays it is he thinks that this is makes him look more manly and more confident when he's doing all these things to you. But in actuality, it's his own insecurities. Or, again, he's got someone else, and he's cheating and doing his own thing, and he wants to make sure that you're not doing it to him.
Okay. Now, as far as parents are concerned, are there indicators or little clues that they might tap into and find, you know, that lets them know that their teen is in an abusive relationship? I mean, for example, you talked about how he was controlling and tried to limit the friends. I would think that it may be a red flag if a parent notices that their teen is shifting away from friends that they've had for a long time. And I'd like us to look at that particular aspect, that you
sure.
find your teen changing their associates or changing their friends. Is that something to be concerned about? And if so, why?
Well, as far as changing friends goes, yes and no.
Okay.
Because a lot of times when we get into relationships with somebody, and especially when we're teens, we tend to really go overboard with mm-hmm. giving it all the attention we can. So what tends to suffer with that are our friendships. But if your teen starts experiencing a change in their physical appearance, in their overall demeanor, if their grades start to suffer,
okay.
if they start dropping out of their favorite activities, if they belong to a sports team, if they're on the volleyball team, and all of a sudden they quit out of nowhere, they're cheerleaders, and all of a sudden they just quit the team and stop doing that,
mm-hmm.
and you see just an overall change in demeanor, and grades are a big one that start to suffer, because what happens is that a child that's in an abusive relationship, a teen that's in an abusive relationship, doesn't have time to think about their grades, because they're so worried about what will happen next. What will he do next? And how do I cover myself and keep him happy?
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a huge sign. If you see a change in their grades, especially, that is a perfect indication that it's time to start stepping in and figuring out what you can do to help to make things different.
Okay. Now, what about the scenario where the abusee experience a lot of pressure to spend time only with the romantic partner or the guy or whomever she or he may be dating? Is that an indicator? And I asked you because I know I was reading someplace and they said sometimes there is pressure to spend time only with that person and not spend any time with anybody else.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Oh, sure. And that's what comes in. That's when the dropping out of all the extracurricular activities comes
mm-hmm.
in, because they can't even spare you. You can't even spare the time to do something, even if it's for an hour of practice after school, because that person requires you to be by their side. And if that person is in a sporting activity, chances are they don't want you to do yours, but they want you to sit in the sideline while they practice to do theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the control factor.
It was once you there just about 24/7.
Right.
Now, one behavior a parent identified was that she noticed that her daughter was involved in what she called just a nonstop texting, just texting all the time. And if she received a text, she had to respond to this text immediately. Is that something that parents should be, you know, concerned about or aware of?
That's a toughie
mm-hmm.
because it's, you know, kids text. I mean, they text with each other. They've got 20 friends and they're all texting nonstop all day long. So she's probably getting barraged by, you know, five or six different girlfriends texting her. Mm-hmm. So it could be absolutely nothing, but it could be something too. But it's difficult to put that lump that into thinking that they're in an abusive relationship because they're getting super texts all the time and they're paying a lot of attention to it.
Okay. What about the secretive, moody type of behavior that many mothers complain about? I know part of that goes hand in hand with being an adolescent. But is there a way, or is there some antenna that goes up where they know this moodiness and this secretiveness, it's gone to the extreme? I mean, at what point do you know it's extreme?
Well, and again, that's a tough one because, moodiness and teenage years go hand in hand. So you'll have to look for a secondary change also. Mm-hmm. And this is where the mentor comes in. Before I get to the mentor, the secondary change is going to be the grade slipping, them dropping out of their favorite sport, their physical appearance shifting, they are dropping away from their friends. So that it'll have to be like a twofold, because moodiness, like I said, in teenagers go hand in hand. And then if your teen is not communicating with you, this is perfect to the mentor situation where you've got to have a mentor, whether it's a trusted relative that's a young adult, in their 20s, that this person might look up to, your teen might look up to, but you need to get somebody involved in this equation if your teen is not opening up to you so that you can have some insight into what they're feeling and what they're going through.
Okay. As we look at that, another indicator may be, and I want to get your feeling on it, repeated breakups and then getting back together and breaking up. Now, I know that's also the norm. You see it a lot in young relationships, teen relationships. But is that something that parents need to be aware of?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The breaking up and getting back together is definitely a sign. And if it's excessive, not just like, this is teen stuff. But if it's excessive, then it's telling you that, there's something happening there. So you need to have good open lines of communication with them. And what I tell parents is just you need to be open and you've got to allow them to speak and be non-judgmental when you communicate with your teens. And sometimes it's hard, but you've got to be a parent, but also have a delicate balance of that trusted friend that they feel okay to open up to you.
Okay.
And some people cannot do that, and that's okay, because as a parent, it's hard to level both of those, especially when your teen might tell you something that you just want to scream when you hear. So getting a secondary person involved is great, but when that person tells you something of trust and confidence, you cannot betray that trust and confidence because the teen will shut down. And then now you have zero insight into what's happening.
Well, what do they do when they're told something that really has put serious potential ramifications?
Then they need to get involved. But if it's something with, like, let's say if the abuser and the abusee are in school together, then the parent needs to go to the school, needs to speak to the guidance counselor or the counselors in school, and have them have the instance of any classes that they're together, separate them out, and have the school be the one to initiate that change. And it's difficult because it doesn't stop abusers because they see each other in lockers and by the lockers and in halls. So it's very, very challenging. You just have to continue trying. And if the abuse becomes too much, either you might have to consider changing your child from school to another school.
What
and see if that can help that way.
Does this overall, and I'm sure it varies according to the school district, but overall, what is the role of the school? Do you find that schools are responsive to this kind of behavior, or do they kind of wash their hands of it? I'll let you hold your thoughts and think about it for a moment. If you're tuned in, it's 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and we are exploring teen dating violence. It is a big problem. It's affecting youth in every community across the nation. Before we went on break, Kathy, I had just asked you about the role of the school. Do you find that schools are responsive, or do they kind of wash their hands of it and say, hey, you know, that's not our problem. You know, we don't have any control over that. What is the role of the school?
They may have done that before in the past, but now they're definitely taking steps towards making sure that all children are safe in school. They are definitely taking steps to stop violent behavior between kids, and especially if a child is being abused, just like when they're being bullied. There's programs now in school that are opening up that each school, again, each school district is different, but they are definitely taking proactive steps to try to minimize and keep all their kids safe.
Okay, so we can expect or anticipate that the school will be supportive and helpful if you are experiencing or suspecting abuse in teen relationships.
Right, but you have to take steps in advising your school, and you have to follow up to make sure that they continue paying attention and making sure that they're doing what they have to do to keep your teen safe.
Okay. Now, there is a pattern to an abusive relationship. I mean, it's sort of a cycle. The individual abuses, then they apologize profusely, usually. Then there's a loving period, and everything is all is well. And then it's followed up again by some tension. Will you talk about that pattern, what one sees in these kind of relationships?
Sure. They're emulating what they see. Probably in their home, and they're just exceptionally confused, and they have no idea how to formulate a good relationship. But yeah, there's a number of things that the abuser will do, and you touched on some great ones where they'll use physical force, and then they'll turn around and apologize profusely. They'll cry, and the person who's being victimized think, oh my gosh, you know, this is terrible. And teens, especially teen girls at that age, they're so extremely emotional, and they really, really mistake a lot of behavior for just, it's really girls and women, and it's in our nature to be more motherly and more nurturing. And when someone is coming to us and they're crying, even though they've hurt us, it is especially in our child's nature and teen's nature to want to forgive and continue with the things that are good. So they pay a lot of emphasis to the little bit of times that the relationship is good, and they tend to try to ignore and shut out when it's bad. So when it's bad, they just keep focusing on when it was good, and they don't realize that those times are a lot further and few, you know, further in between the negative parts that are going on in the relationship. And it's challenging to try to get through to a child or to a teen that is not okay, especially when they're not communicating it with you. But yes, they use sexual coercion in order to control the relationship. They use technology to control the relationship. They use emotional and verbal abusive threats, constant insults and monitoring. They humiliate, they isolate, or they just generally stalk these other teens. And it is just a terrible cycle that a lot of times the victim's just not prepared to deal with it. They don't know how to deal with it. And then they turn to and start accepting it.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you find that the abusee, the victim, has a lot of feelings of guilt, that they take on blame for the conflict and the disagreements and kind of feel like it was their fault, and so, you know, in turn, they have guilt and shame?
Absolutely. It's all a manipulation game. Mm-hmm. It's all a game of manipulation. And the victim, unless she has a lot of confidence, unless she stands up for herself and just snaps out of this whole bubble of, well, this is love and this is what love mm-hmm. is supposed to look like, she will continue to be manipulated and until she's completely broken down.
Well, I'd say they often say to the abuser, often says to the victim, if you love me, you would do X, Y, and Z. And that, just that term, that phrase should be a warning sign as there's some kind of possible abuse. A statement like this is sort of what would we call it? Emotional blackmail, you know.
That is the best way to describe it. It is emotional blackmail is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And emotional abuse, it like teasing and bullying and humiliating others, can be difficult to recognize because it may not leave the visible scars. I mean, sometimes, you know, a parent may be tuned in because all of a sudden their appearance may change, but their clothing may change. They might have bruises on their arms, so instead they may start wear a long sleeve shirt when it's 90 degrees outside. That kind of behavior
red
also
flag.
Indicates
red flag right there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the worst is this, and I've had friends, and I remember specifically the kids in my school that would behave like this, where they'd see something mean, really mean, and then they'd turn on and say, oh, I'm just kidding. Come on. Stop being so sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And you're left in the middle of that going, And especially if you care about somebody, it's very confusing. And then you start to doubt yourself and think, gosh, am I being silly for being upset at that? And then that's when they can plant that seed of doubt in your mind is when they start to break you down.
Mm-hmm. And at what point do we need to seek professional help for the abuser or the abusee, the victim? I'm thinking at some point that it may not just be enough talking to mom or the sister, that you may really need some professional to come in to intervene.
Well, that's a good one. Yes. As you need to intervene the first moment you realize something is wrong. Because
mm-hmm.
chances are by the time you realize it's wrong, it's been going on for a while. So the quicker you can intervene in a bad situation where your kid is in a bad situation, the better off you'll be. And if your teen is not listening to you, it's not filtering to you, they continue, then you need to seek professional guidance immediately, whether it's take it to a therapy or a counselor or somebody. But you need to look into it because if you are not breaking through,
mm-hmm.
somebody needs to. And there are professionals that are experienced and have the knowledge and understanding on how to break through when you cannot.
Now, we find that, I guess it varies according to state, but dating violence and the law don't seem to mix. I mean, the law doesn't seem to hold it as a real serious crime, or am I just being misled there?
No, it's challenging because a lot of times they're under 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to give them a chance. They don't want to start them off in life with a record and with blemishes on their record. And so the law tends to, unfortunately, be a little softer when it comes to the teens, which allows them to do more because what the law is trying to do is give them a fair chance
mm-hmm.
as adults. But again, it kind of counterintuitive because it is somebody who's establishing a good solid foundation of abuse and being an abuser will probably continue that and get worse, and it'll probably escalate as they grow, as they're older. But at the same time, they could just be, experiencing what they don't, you know, acting out because they don't know any better. And again, it may pass and they may get some intervention and some help and realize that it's, that the way they've been behaving is not the right way to be and completely be a productive member of society. Mm-hmm. So it's a delicate balance on how they need to treat this because they don't want to ruin somebody's future. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there could be a monster in the making. And so it's a very delicate balance, and the judicial system kind of decides to take a step back and wait and see until they're over 18, until they're adults, in order to step in to do any real, real punishment.
I have to ask you this because I've heard it a lot, so I want to see if I'm on the right track. People who are abused often will say that they ask for it. How many times have you heard that? Or that it was my fault? Have you heard that a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, and it's sad and it's scary that they would feel that way. But it goes back to, again, not having good role models, not having anybody to show them that that is not right and you did nothing wrong and it's their problem, not yours. And then since they don't have anybody and any good kind of role model, then they're only relying on what their abuser is telling them, and the abuser is breaking them down and making them feel less and less and less like a person, and they dehumanize their abuse, you know, abusing. And it's sad when you hear somebody who's been beaten say that they probably did something to deserve it.
Mm-hmm. I know that violent relationships, particularly in adolescence, can have serious ramifications. They put the victims in sort of a higher risk for substance abuse and eating disorders and risky sexual behavior.
And suicide
and future domestic violence. In these last few minutes that we have, I wanted to ask you to address some of these ramifications that occur from, the abuse that may have occurred in adolescence. As you were talking about, you have seen these women, you know, in the penal system who were abused early. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, certainly. If once, and this goes to show, a prime example is with the Ohio kidnappings, how he took them as kids, he broke them down, he beat them, and after a while, they just gave up. And they went along with whatever he was doing because they didn't have any self-esteem anymore. They didn't have any hope. And that's all we need is hope for better. But once you give that up, you stop, you give up on yourself. And that's what happens, and that's what I realized happened with these women that I spoke to who were sitting, some of them, for life. Mm-hmm. Because they just gave up on themselves. They didn't feel that they were worth anything. So when they got into these negative relationships, when they were going around participating in the things that they did, they didn't feel they deserved better than that. And so they continued to do negative things, and their life continued to spiral downward, and they were substance abusers, and they were suicidal, and they were in just volatile relationship, one right after the other, right after the other, and drinking heavily and excessively, and just giving up on themselves, giving up on their bodies, prostituting themselves out because they felt they were worthless and they were convinced that they were worthless and nobody was there to help give them a hand and guide them to a better way. And that's what we need to do as parents and as just as a society. When you see something's going on, you need to stand up. And people need to speak up. People need to extend a hand to each other, especially our young girls. They are stars, and the way I describe young girls and teens, they are shooting stars. And the only thing that's going to alter that trajectory is them being victimized. The moment they're victimized, that shooting star suddenly starts to spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And so I teach girls to stay out of relationships like that. I teach them to have more self-confidence and raise their level of awareness so that they don't become victims either of domestic violence relationships or abusive teen relationships or being a victim of crime on the street. It's all about your awareness and your confidence and always thinking in favor of yourself so that you can always rise. And that's all I need. I need our girls to rise.
So what you're saying is if they have this positive self-esteem, if they feel good about themselves, then we won't find them even entering into these kinds of relationships. It's when you don't feel that good about self, you're unsure, you feel like you need to have a boyfriend, you feel like you need to be loved. These are the kinds of things that will at least push you in that direction. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Our girls and the ones that seek love so desperately when they're younger like that, it's because they lack it at home. They lack something. There's something missing that they're searching for. And if we keep our girls filled, we keep their glasses of confidence filled, that they won't fall victim to things like that.
So we keep them in positive activities that give them some strokes, reinforce what they're doing. That will be a real key to addressing teen violent relationships. Kathy, I just want to say thank you for your time and you sharing your expertise. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809. Extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org.